This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk here with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we've got a hot topic, so pull up those chairs, boys and girls, and listen to the topic today. We're talking about security and mobile devices. I thought we'd bring in one of the big dogs here. We bring in Symantec. We bring in John Bordwine from Symantec and talk about mobile security, mobile devices, and federal employees, whether they're worried about using mobile devices, you know, for their business, for their agency, or for weekend work with kids when you're watching your kids at the soccer game. John, welcome here. I'd just like you to give maybe a quick background from our audience of how you wound up working for Symantec and maybe a little bit what Symantec is up to in the mobile area, please.
Sure. Well, thanks. Good morning, John. Appreciate coming in. I've been in this area for actually a good number of years. I ended up going into the U.S. Army out of high school. I won't go back too far here.
Was that one of those go to jail or go to the Army deals?
No, it wasn't one of those kind of things. Fortunately, I was ready to leave home, and the Army had the right bonuses for me when you're 18 years old to join at that point in time. So I actually joined into the Army. I found myself working at the White House Communications Agency from, you know, a couple of different instances of working with some different government agencies. And so I really stayed in this area. So I went ahead and stayed in the Army, went through some schooling while I was in the area. And I was in telecommunications and technology, and it just, that model fit the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah, great.
So I went through a couple of different small systems integrators, a couple of startup organizations around emerging technologies. And I guess I got really lucky on making the transition for emerging technologies and moving from company to company, because I actually ended up working with a very small company at that point in time that developed the initial Ethernet technologies. So from that point, it just went into networking. And from that, you know, you started doing networking and you started looking at the security aspects to it. I spent a lot of time with a couple of different networking companies. Then I moved over to what used to be called Network Associates at that point in time, mm-hmm. is now McAfee, mm-hmm. Which is all now owned by Intel. And I worked with McAfee. I was actually, my last position over there was pretty much the same position I have here at Symantec, was public sector CTO. And then, you know, I had the opportunity to move to Symantec. It's a larger organization, nothing wrong with McAfee, but it's a much larger organization, much broader product line. And I looked at it and said, this is the opportunity. This is the next step in my evolution, is to expand security beyond just what we think about as the old AV type technology, and expand that across data loss prevention and control and compliance measurements and policy measurements, and even into storage and backup technology. Yeah, that's how I came out.
What a great background. That's boots on the ground.
Definitely so.
Great. You know, one of the motivators why I brought you in here was last week we had the guy from vaccines.gov on the air. And I said, well, how'd you design the site? Well, we did a lot of surveys first to find out what citizens wanted, because Obama wants us to engage citizens. And so we engaged citizens. We physically went out and talked to people, and they said, how do you want your information? Do you want it in the yellow pages? Do you want it, you know, in a magazine? Do you want it in a website? We want information with handheld devices. They found that 90% of Americans have cell phones, and they want their information this way. And it just makes so much sense that federal websites are changing to be mobile friendly, but also federal IT managers have to worry about managing the other end of it, of mobile devices that their employees are using. And I think this is just too hot a topic just to even not maybe do this every week. It's just so hot. You know, in desktop world, there's Windows and there's maybe some Macs and maybe some Linux. Pretty easy to divide up the world. But with mobile phones, there's four or five operating systems to worry about. You have Android, Windows, Symbian. I mean, it's just starting off, the degree of difficulty is multiplied by three or four just for starters, isn't it?
Absolutely so. It absolutely is. And that's what you have to look at. And don't forget the iPhone, the iOS component today, which is really growing and expanding very quickly. So I understand the point. The idea, I would think, is, you know, when agencies are looking at this type of environment, you have to think about those types of technologies coming in and being the web browser that people are utilizing. It's not on a desktop anymore. It most definitely is in a handheld device of some sort, whether it's a feature phone or a smartphone with a lot more capabilities.
In doing some show prep, I May 23rd edition of Network World, page 21, if you want to look this one up. 72% of smartphone owners who use these devices access sensitive information such as banking and credit card accounts. And so if you're managing phones for the federal government, you got to realize that your employees are using phones for many different activities. Some are going to be very sensitive, but also involving financial information. So, I mean, you know, first of all, multiple operating systems, and then financial information. I mean, this is another multiplier.
You have to think about it. Today's cell phone, whether it's, like you said, a feature phone or a smartphone, it's becoming your digital wallet. In all reality, you're using it for every aspect, from purchasing to, like you said, online banking to, you know, now you can use it at the airport to scan your boarding pass. There's initiatives to take that and turn that into your subway pass, right? And your parking pass at the subway station. So there's so many different aspects you have to think about. On top of that, like you said, now you might be splitting that cell phone and using it, part of it for your personal information and the other part of the phone for your work information, which now you still could have, like in my instance, I have company proprietary information on my cell phone. So I don't want the two to actually mix. So now there has to be some type of data watchdog on those devices to make sure they don't get mixed up.
You talked about the early days of Ethernet. We had Professor Ernest Forman in from George Washington University. He was there with Vint Cerf and doing a lot of the boots on the ground work for that. And I can remember back in those early days, you know, if you think about Windows 95 and the earlier versions of Windows and Windows 98, those were designed to run as a root operating system on a hard drive. And then over the years, people started realizing that, you know, there's need some kind of network security filters to protect that. And I think a lot of these operating systems on phones are operating as the root. And so what has to happen is companies like Symantec got to say, no, let's take a look at this. What we have to do is enforce policies. We have to do things like network access and manage these devices in maybe a similar way as the early PCs.
I agree with you 100%. We have to look at what's being stored on these devices. You have to think about them as being a computing asset in your environment. When you think about if you're going to issue a phone to someone from a corporation and say, okay, you can use it for personal use to an extent, but we're also going to take control over what you can actually do on that device. We have to think about that very specifically, because if we don't, then we start seeing those things, like you said, from the early networking days and Ethernet and the operating systems. There weren't so many hackers out there as well either. They weren't as sophisticated. You couldn't go spend $800 and buy your own attack vector kit, right? Which you can do today on the internet, and it's legal. And they're building the same things. You could actually go out and spend $50 and probably some open source, and you could actually develop an attack kit against a standard feature phone that uses, utilizing SMS and break open SMS messages. So it's that simple today.
When you go to the Symantec website, you find out that there's a lot of different products. In fact, there's a package of products: endpoint protection, network access control, mobile management, mobile encryption, two-factor authentication. 5 hours later, let's just jump in on the first point, because I'll toss this out, because you probably know a little about endpoint protection, mobile edition, antivirus, firewall, and SMS protection. I mean, in Europe, they use a lot of SMS for advertising, and here it's not used that often, but guess what? Everyone carries it with them. You're vulnerable.
You absolutely are. So the thing is, I look at SMS as really a risk factor when you're looking at either a smartphone or a feature phone. There's the capability to break in, to put man in the middle on SMS. There are actually very specific attack vectors that's now defined as SMS of death on feature phones. Because what it'll allow you to do is to send an SMS message, interject an SMS message to a feature phone, and it will constantly reboot. So think about if someone did this to 5,000 phones on a particular cellular network, right? All of a sudden, you have 5,000 reboots going on at one point in time. How does that only affect the user? How does that affect their productivity if they're using it for their work environment? And how does it affect the carrier at the same time? So you have to look at those things. You have to protect the SMS. You have to make sure that you don't have virus definitions, that you can clean any malicious code that might come in from a download, particularly an application you downloaded that for free and you thought was really cool. But it wasn't just the application. There were some tag-alongs associated with that. You have to look at all those aspects, I think.
What I discovered this morning is that Symantec has a Connect section where their blog's about specific types of security, specific just for mobile devices. There's a blog that just talks about endpoint management, the endpoint management community to exchange information on this. I mean, who would have thought of it 4 or 5 years ago?
You wouldn't have thought of the same thing, right? We always thought about desktop computers, and we migrated into, you know, the laptop environments. Now we're talking about tablets. But along the way, the cell phone technology has expanded so greatly that we have to think of it as being a computing asset on our network.
Yeah, it's incredible. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, talk more about maybe some federal initiatives in the area of managing mobile devices and some of the more product offerings from Symantec to address these issues, including policy control and maybe talking about new FISMA initiatives coming up later this year. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, John Bordwine, public sector CTO at Symantec.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, a jaw,
shortness of breath.
Please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness.
It's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath. Cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
911.
Cellist Yo-Yo Ma, one of the great stars of classical music, enthralls audiences all over the world with his passion and artistry. When it comes to picking a cello, he tends toward Italian instruments made in the 18th century. When it comes to a timepiece, however, he favors an instrument crafted in Switzerland, the Rolex Datejust. Since Rolex introduced the first self-winding calendar wristwatch in 1945, the Datejust has become one of the most sought-after models in the Oyster line. With its classic Oyster design and magnified date window, the Datejust is every bit as distinctive as the master cellist who wears it. To see the Datejust and a complete selection of other Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Torno, the world's largest watch store. Torno, the fashion center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
With vacation time just around the corner, Ackerman Security can help keep families like yours safe and secure. For just $18.95 a month, trust in the protection of Ackerman's nationally certified monitoring center and switch your existing system at no cost and that great $18.95 rate. And Ackerman is the only company with a guaranteed response time. Federal government employees get an added bonus. 4 months of monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is a wider circle. Every day they receive hundreds of calls for help, most of which come from mothers who can't obtain the bare necessities of life that many take for granted. A Wider Circle collects donations of basic need items for those mothers and others living in need. Go to federalnewsradio.com to learn more and become part of the solution today. This message brought to you by Papa John's and Federal News Radio.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio live, John Bordwine from Symantec. He's a public sector CTO. We're talking about mobile devices and security for mobile devices. And I was at the Symantec website this morning, and I come up with an interesting fun fact here about the public sector. And if you're in the member of the public sector, you maybe want to listen to this. It's the most targeted industry for malware. 1 in 29 email messages are blocked as malicious. Wow, that's a lot, isn't it, John?
That is a lot. It is number one on the enterprise market. You know, I think finance comes in at number two. But the public sector, looking at state and local, as well as all the aspects of the federal government, think about, you know, people are dropping malicious payload into emails to try to find a way, a backdoor into a network. From there, they can expand and think about who has the largest network in the world.
Right. And so all my listeners have like these little targets on their forehead, you know, they got this, these circles where people are going right after them. And they have to understand what threats mobile devices. And I say the story of, okay, so some guy named John Gilroy waltzes into your office with a new phone or a new iPad. And all of a sudden, what's the reaction? How do you handle those devices? You have to have some kind of a policy. And I guess the federal government right now is trying to develop policies for mobile devices, aren't they?
They're working around the policies around mobile devices. I've actually had the opportunity to speak with several agencies recently. I've traveled around a good bit, both on the DOD as well as the civilian agency side of the government. And they're looking at how do they bring these types of devices securely into their environment, because they know that there's such... You know, they allow people to get their job done while they are on the road, whether they don't have to be in the office to get things accomplished. And it's more than just talking on the telephone now, right? They want to get access to applications. They want to get access to the servers and the network back at, you know, HQ, so they can get their job done. So there's so many different aspects they have to look at, but their policy, the security, not only the security policy, but the connectivity policy becomes a component here. So how are they going to connect back into the agency's proper network, and then what can they get access to, and how do you authenticate them as actually being a true user in that environment? You have to start thinking about the many different aspects, just like you would for any other device you allow on the network, but now you have to think that this one has a little higher risk value to it.
I used to take all these tests for networking and all this A+ and MCSE and everything. I was talked about network access control. Well, guess what? Network access control, mobile edition, is what we have to worry about now, isn't it?
It absolutely is. If you go back, like you said, you know, you start looking at network access control, it started out, oh, wow, that was probably 15 years ago at least.
I take those tests and memorize all that stuff, and yeah, you go over and you take the 30 questions, wow.
Yeah, the old 802.1x standards and everything that came about, right? I actually happened to be working at that point in time, we talked about what I was doing, with the CTO of the organization I was working for, was one of the co-authors on 802.1x. So, you know, I go back a little ways on that.
NAC, yeah.
But the idea you have to think about is, yeah, you have to set up network access control and policies around that, just like you would want to do for any other device internal to the network. But again, they're internal to the network, you already have a level of authentication, right? It might be your CAC or your PIV or, you know, your username and password. You might have that whole drive encrypted so that, you know, there's a protection measure there. You can't do those same things. You can, but if they haven't moved that direction, you can't do those same things on a mobile device. What you have to think of, though, is from the policy, network access control, what does that mean? Well, that means, do I let them come in over the cellular network? Do I make sure they have to come in through Wi-Fi? Do I set up a VPN tunnel? How do I authenticate this device? It's no longer just username and password. Sorry, folks, antiquated. It's not a security process anymore, right? It's just a necessity to get you to what the next measure of authentication should be. So you start looking at those very different aspects associated to network access control, and it expands further than it ever had to do within a common network environment.
I was just thinking of what if my listeners are over at FEMA? Their job is to be out helping people. Their job is supposed to be in St. Louis now, I guess. And so by definition, they have to have remote access. And so where do policies, you have to have a policy.
You have to have a policy, because what happens, think about it, someone is using let's even just go back to a basic laptop connectivity, right? So you hit a Wi-Fi spot and you want to start downloading information. You want to upload information back to FEMA headquarters and things that are going on in the environment. Well, so they do it. What happens? They get distracted. Somebody grabs a laptop. Now, yeah, it may have gone dark on you because it's not been used for the last 15 minutes, but somebody potentially could still have access to that type of information. But with the same risk vector is there on a cell phone, that they might be using their browser to get back into a common interface to get access to information from FEMA. So you have to think about it the same way, right? Except it's a little bit higher risk factor, because cell phones are lost a lot easier than a laptop is.
Yeah, the risk factor is much higher. One of the I work for a small company, and the guy who runs all our servers, I walked up to him yesterday and said, what's the safest phone around? He pulled out his iPhone. Now he manages Windows servers. He says, and I trust this guy. And I asked you in the break, I said, what's the safest? So is an iPhone the safest phone out there now? Or what do you think?
So you get me in trouble with a lot of these different vendors, okay? Because I have to work with these guys, to be honest with you.
So be diplomatic. Diplomatic, yeah, that's the word.
Well, we're in Washington, so I have to be political too. Yeah. But, I think it's different platforms have pros and cons. the iPhone from the iOS perspective, because it is such a tightly controlled and locked down environment to begin with, I think it brings some inherent security features to it that some of the other platforms might not necessarily have. But I look at the other side and saying that's where you start now, but that also means that because it's so locked down, you may not be able to put the policies and controls on that type of device that you would like to see. So how do you get Apple to work with you to do that, right? So we've run through it, Symantec, we've run through, I was part of one of the initial early adopters on taking iPhones. What can we do with an iPhone? How do we protect our intellectual property, right? In my job, I have intellectual property that I get emails on. I get my work emails there. I get my home emails. And, you know, when I'm traveling, a lot of times my communication message with my kids is through SMS, right? So how do you protect all these different vectors on that type of device? So iPhone's been pretty well. But you think about it, too, is BlackBerry, if you could set up your BlackBerry enterprise server in your own environment, then you have control over a lot of policies that go along with the BlackBerry. So I think each different environment and each different operating systems has pros and cons associated to it. One I think is getting some emerging security brought into it would be the Android platform. My concern there is because it's so open source. Not a bad thing with that. I'm not against open source. But when you have open source code and applications written to open source, then it gives you a little bit, a little uneasy feeling until you can actually go through and scrub applications and start setting some kind of reputation awareness around those applications.
But Symantec's platform agnostic. Bring it on, huh?
We're basically bring it on. We're going to work with them, right? We're going to protect them. We're going to work with these things. We want to manage them as assets. We want to help you set the policies around how you can use the phones. Look at the security aspects of each one of the platforms because that's our direction. We don't care which platform you want to bring into the environment. We don't care. Bring tablets, right? We have all the different tablets that are out there today, and you're seeing the ads on all the new ones that are coming
constantly.
It's just unbelievable, right? Those are not laptops, folks. They're very different, right? Because most of your interface to get to back in information is through a web browser, right? You don't have applications sitting local to that pretty much, right? Except for the little applications that you would use like you have on an iPhone. You would have those type of applications or on an Android. But you may not have that Salesforce application if you're a salesperson, right? What you're going to actually do is have a browser interface back to the main Salesforce version that you have in your office, and that's how you'll get the access to the information. So you can't even protect the applications anymore. You're actually protecting communications and data.
So the apps, generally speaking, from the apps that will run on an Android system are probably riskier just in general than the apps from Apple. Is that a fair statement?
I think it's a fair statement. We've done some research, and I don't know if I'm supposed to say this. I won't say it outward because, again, I have to, we work with all the different vendors. But one of the things you look at is applications that are written to open source, there is a higher risk. And we actually did some checking, and we found a higher number of applications on the Android platform that had the capability of carrying malicious payload more than other platforms.
This is very carefully phrased this because some people can take this out of context.
Right.
Context, because it has the capability doesn't mean that, the car on the street, there's a capability of smashing into my car and it was parked in the street, but doesn't mean it's going to happen, but it just has the capability.
It has the capability, right? There's the hooks that would potentially be there for someone to do it if they had the experience, the know-how, and really wanted to get it accomplished. Like you said, bad driver might smash into your car. Good driver, you don't have to worry about him so much.
But if the driver's in Utah and you're here, then less chance of him smashing into you. It's just that you have to define these very carefully. That's great. We come back, talk a little bit more about Flash, talk more about other Symantec options like mobile management. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, John Bordwine, public sector CTO at Symantec.
Maryland truly is the ground zero of cybersecurity. I would like to see students that are coming through this program that are cybersecurity professionals, practitioners, and scholars.
That's Dr. Rick Forno, Graduate Program Director for UMBC Cybersecurity Programs. Attend a free webinar Thursday, June 9th at 1 p.m. Dr. Forno will highlight UMBC's cybersecurity programs and talk about the upcoming Maryland Cyber Challenge and Conference in Baltimore this October. For more information, visit umbc.edu/cyber.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
If you're in federal IT, you want to hear more about storage efficiency, especially when storage is eating up your IT budget. But what is storage efficiency? NetApp makes it simple. It's storage that's flexible. That's easier to manage. That requires far less hardware, often only half as much. And half as much means half the cost. IT efficiency starts with storage efficiency built on NetApp and delivered by NetApp partners like Blue River Information Technology. To get efficient now, visit netapp.com/federal.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Eric.
A non-event is how Army Vice Chief of Staff Peter Corelli describes the training that U.S. troops are getting on a new regulation allowing gay people to serve openly in the military. Most of the problems and trouble that had been predicted appears not to have materialized. The Pentagon is avoiding giving up details on the training because of concern that too much attention could inflame the issue. All of the training should be complete by mid-August. 2.2 million people need to go through the training. I'm J.J. Green.
Estimates show that more than 20,000 airline crew members clear security at our nation's airports each day. Since the beginning of this year, a unique group of 17,500 crew members from 61 different air carriers have been using the Airink Crew Pass service to test a new expedited screening process. This trial program at BWI, Pittsburgh, and Columbia, South Carolina uses three layers of secure data to positively identify each crew member in typically less than 8 seconds. Airink is focused on keeping you moving safely. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Federal News Radio. This week, my special guest is Caroline Adams Miller, an amazing coach and a best-selling author of Creating Your Best Life, The Ultimate Life List Guide. Tune in to listen to Caroline. The show is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Vienna, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors, all without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have John Bordwine, public sector CTO at Symantec, doing a little mobile madness today, talking about, you know, what about malicious code and mobile devices and how to manage it and enterprise management, all kinds of systems. In the last 4 or 5 months, we've read all kinds of things about Flash and Steven Jobs and he hates it and no one should touch it. And Adobe said, no, it's okay, back and forth, back and forth. From your vendor-neutral perspective, what about Flash? Is it just a redirect, a misdirect? Is it something to worry about?
No, I think it's, well, you look at it, I think kind of the decision point is, and it's a little bit of the argument is around HTML 5.0 or Flash, right? They're a little bit of a competing technology. I think Flash has been pretty well adapted in the environment. But one thing you have to think about, though, from a Flash perspective, there are a lot of plugins and open APIs that take advantage of Flash. I think that's probably where you would actually see the highest area of weakness and potential security risk around Flash. is you have to have a lot of plugins to do it. And Flash in itself, right, is a plugin into a web browser, which gives you amazing graphics and you can do animation and all those kind of really neat things that go along with it. But the other plugins that come along with Flash, I think you have to look at. Also, I think one of the things that they've done is, you know, Adobe's brought Flash in and they've started adding some additional security functionality into the latest version of Flash. So I think if you really look at what they're bringing into the way of security, they're making it a little more locked down environment. Things like cookie tracking, right? You can actually turn that off now in Flash versus what you could used to do. You could, but it was very extremely difficult. Now it's kind of a user-friendly interface so that people can't track where you've been. Still, number one concern is when you go to a website, think about it. If you're going to download something that's going to utilize Flash to run that image or that movie or whatever it happens to be, think about that website that you're going to. Does it really make sense, or is it something that could potentially be risky? Now you might even want to think about having a rating system on your web page selection and having it rated for you if there's been known malware coming from that page. So you start having to tie a lot of these pieces together, I think, no matter what the viewer would actually be.
I'm a vendor-neutral attack dog, too. I don't want to just attack Adobe here. Let's pick on Microsoft a little bit. Network World again. This is right from the horse's mouth of Microsoft. They said about one of every 14 programs downloaded by Windows users turns out to be malicious. I mean, these numbers are scary. And so from the perspective of a federal IT professional, you have to keep up with patches for your operating system and patches for your applications. But the patch concern is right there with mobile devices too, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I saw the same article. I read that as well. I was looking through some things last night and actually came across the same one. And I was like, wow. That's it? Only 1 in 14?
Okay. I was shocked at that many, and you said, oh, no, sure, like 10 in 14.
I mean, I guess there's a difference between what actually has malicious payload into it and what potentially could, because we kind of look at it from both aspects, right? If the code's not written properly, you have more risk associated to it. But yes, you have to think about this is not only on the desktop and the applications there, but think about the other applications that you download on your cell phone. Think about, you know, on a phone that you can actually now put Microsoft Word on it, right? You can have Excel spreadsheets. And each one of those applications, there are security updates to them. In a corporate environment or in a federal government agency, those updates are pretty well automated, so you don't have to think about it. When was the last time you had an update for your applications pushed out to your cell phone? And you say, oh, yeah, I wanted to make sure I do this. Or when was the last time you went out and checked those applications to see if there were updates associated to them? I'm going to tell you, it's not something we all think about, right? But you have to think about those exact same things that you would on a desktop unit.
I'm thinking of analogies here of you know, I always change oil in my car. What if I drove a motorcycle? It's smaller and quicker. Would I always worry about maintenance as much as the car? Well, it's the same thing with a mobile phone, is you may be focusing in on your network and your desktop and not realize that this maintenance has to be done. And if you're managing all these devices for an agency, there's got to be some kind of mobile management or some kind of a suite or a tool that allow you. Symantec must have something that allows that distributive management. Is that right?
Yeah, we absolutely do. So it's mobile device management is kind of the overarching term, but Symantec actually does. We look at these devices so that we can manage them as assets to your environment, not just a cell phone, right? Not just something else that can have a web browser on it or something you make telephone calls, but a computing asset to your environment. How do you set the policies on these devices? How do you track these devices? Who has what device? How do you authenticate these devices when they want to gain access back into our corporate environment? So all these aspects come into play, and that's a piece of mobile device management. How would you potentially set up what we classify as a sandbox environment, right, which is kind of a secure area within a cell phone that you could do business and or government operations work, but it's separated from your personal side of your phone. You have to manage those two different things. What happens if a phone is lost? How do you wipe that phone so that you don't have any type of confidential information that might get exposed? So you have to think about that. That all comes back into that mobile device management strategy.
I remember 2 or 3 years ago, my listeners were all beat up about someone left a notebook computer in a cab or something, and everyone's been saying, oh, the federal IT folks don't know what they're doing. That happens probably 200 times a day in New York City. I mean, it happens constantly. And I think this is one thing now with mobile devices, this ability to control to do a remote wipe is something that gives all kinds of flexibility that we never had before.
Absolutely so. So encrypting the information as well as being able to wipe it, right? Because I hate to say it, you know, yeah, the guys at NIST might get a little upset with me, but you can break encryption, right? Not everybody uses very strong encryption when they encrypt information on a cell phone because there's some overhead associated to it. So if you break the encryption and a device is stolen or lost and you can actually break the encryption, then they have access, right? So what you really want to do is have that first person notify you, just like if you lost your credit card. You're not going to wait around, right, and see who finds it for you. You're going to call the bank and say, cancel this thing.
Yep.
I don't want to be liable. Think about that. Same way with your cell phone, right? Call immediately and say, I lost it. The networking manager that handles the mobile side of the asset management says, okay, we're going to send out a kill. We're going to wipe this thing. Now we're going to see if we can, maybe we can turn on the GPS and find it for you, but we're not going to run any, have an additional risk associated to it.
I was interviewing Terry Gouditis from Civalence, and I asked her about, I stumbled on a topic like this about maybe encryption, and she said, well, people like me, and she, oh no, I didn't mean to say that, but there are people out there are people out there who this is a challenge. This is like a hobby for them, and encryption. Oh sure, how many minutes? I mean, and it's a real challenge for some people. It's a different mindset, and I think that my listening audience has all kinds of variations and requirements for encryption. Some don't really need it. Some people aren't encouraged to be transparent and engage citizens and put out information. I mean, recovery.gov is one example. Vaccines.gov. There are other agencies. I had Dave Winograd in the air, and I was in his office over in the Pentagon last year. His office is like a vault. I think he had metal everywhere. And it was one of the secure places ever, and I think they would have to ask more questions about encryption than it's just the basic thing. And I think that's the checklist here. If you're trying to figure out what there's some things that are important, remote what might be, and levels of encryption may vary with your end users.
No, absolutely. So I think one of the interesting things I saw recently, this is how exciting my life is sometimes. I was up reviewing the NIST webpage on the crypto module validation program. I noticed that there are two new FIPS 140-2 encryption modules that have been posted up there by Apple for iOS. So even these guys are taking it very serious that there has to be a level of government-approved encryption on their devices to protect that information.
That's like a Redskin sitting down for dinner with the Cowboys. I mean, that's pretty tough for Apple to do that, huh?
Absolutely. I was very surprised when I saw that. But kudos to those guys for understanding it. That's something they have to do in this environment.
Is two-factor authentication even part of the equation for some of these people using mobile devices for the government?
I think it's not only for the government, John. I think it's two-factor authentication is something we have to really think of on any type of mobile device. So, yes, it has to be. It could be. You know, I actually heard, I won't say where it came from, but there's people are testing a USB device that plugs into a cell phone that they actually can authenticate using their CAC.
Hmm.
And that to me takes it a little to the extreme, but I guess that's the way they want to do it, right? So, you know, it's coming out of the DOD, but I won't say where it came from. But you have to think about two-factor authentication. How can you actually ascertain that that device should have access to the environment that you're plugging into? Well, if it's coming into the agency, how do you authenticate them? Like you said, it may not be that you could swipe your PIV card, but you have to do multi-factor authentication to some level in order to make sure that you have a level of identity management, because two-factor authentication really starts equating to identity management of the user and the device, not just the user or the device.
And it goes up, up, up to more of this network management and back to NAC, network access control. It goes back to that silly thing I had to learn 10 years, 15
yeah,
years ago.
Yeah, absolutely
huh?
So.
Take a quick break. We can come back. We'll do a little survey and find out if John is truly a nerd or not. Sounds like he was going to the NIST site for that. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, John Bordwine, public sector CTO at Symantec.
What if learning a new language was as easy as watching your favorite TV show or playing your favorite video game? What if, while you were having your morning coffee, you could learn how to speak or read a new language? Well, now you can. Introducing an all-new, more powerful Rosetta Stone. Developed to fully immerse you in your new language, the all-new Rosetta Stone software is now easier than ever before. You can learn your new language on your computer, then practice in your car or on your smartphone or MP3 player without ever opening a book or memorizing a single word. It's never been easier to learn a new language. And to celebrate, Rosetta Stone is giving away free demo CD-ROMs of their all-new language immersion technology. To get yours absolutely free, call now, 1-800-900-2599. Immerse yourself in your new language. Call now and receive your free demo CD-ROM of the all-new Rosetta Stone software. 1-800-900-2599. For your free demo, call 1-800-900-2599.
Here's Pete Tsironas, Associate Chief Information Officer, Department of Energy, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Cloud Computing, sponsored by Lockheed Martin.
Benefits to me are it's forcing an agency to do what it's supposed to be doing with taxpayer dollars and forget about managing the lights and keeping the data up and the internet and that sort of thing, and truly just get in the business of doing what the federal government's about, is services to citizens.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
You won't find our products in computer stores, but the technology we provide helps make life better in America. We're Lockheed Martin, the leading provider of information technology to the federal government. From software to systems to cybersecurity to cloud computing, Lockheed Martin IT solutions help government agencies operate efficiently and effectively. Supporting the people who provide services to citizens is all a question of how, and it is the how that Lockheed Martin delivers.
My name is Abe Lincoln, and I've been thinking about this cool place that you can go. It's a website that I speak of called USA.gov. It's government information online, and that's mighty fine. USA.gov. Got questions on your log cabin? Housing answers, yeah, they have them. USA.gov is your official source. Get Social Security info, whatever that is. ID theft prevention tips, because that's your biz. Even changed my address, and I don't mean to Gettysburg. Find government auctions, jobs, apply for student aid. Hey, I wouldn't lie, I'm Honest Abe. It's government made easy for the people. Take it from the dude in the stovepipe hat. USA.gov is where it's at. So don't wait 67 years to check it out. And that, my fellow Americans, is what I'm talking about.
The website of the week is the Google Transparency Report. Now, this site includes an interactive map, so you can click on different countries. The Chinese officials consider censorship demands to be state secrets, so we cannot disclose that information at this time. This can show traffic patterns. If a country blocks internet access, you can immediately see this. You can see if any countries are blocking internet traffic. The Google Transparency Report.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Could switching to Geico really save you 15% or more on car insurance? If a tree falls in the forest and no one is around, does it make a noise? Yep.
Be like the 4 million who switched to Geico last year, and you too could start saving money. For a free rate quote, visit geico.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Mobile technology is revolutionizing government. Learn what strategies are being adopted to help citizens and federal agencies access information on the go at AFSEA Bethesda's Executive Breakfast, June 23rd, at the Bethesda North Marriott. Hear from Gwen Costin of the GSA, Lieutenant Colonel Anmi Torres of DISA, and other federal leaders as they discuss application development, cultural hurdles, and the security implications of the ongoing mobile revolution. To register, visit afseabethesda.org.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly 1 in 3 children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov, brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio of John Bordwine, public sector CTO at Symantec, been talking about mobile devices and security and flash and mobile management and all kinds of technical sites. And we got a little technical there. We're going to go a little bit light and lively here. We're going to do my scientific survey here, John, just to determine if you, in fact, are a true nerd or not, a nerdometer survey here.
Okay.
What was the year of your first computer?
Wow, I would say that was probably somewhere around 1981.
That's not very nerdy. That's really kind
of... That's not too nerdy.
You're your first cell phone.
Well, again, this is a tough one. This was, you know, later in life, I came up with my first cell phone, and it was actually one of those phones that big bricks that you put in your car type of thing, right?
Mm. So you had a car phone then?
It was a car phone.
Ooh, that was a cool guy back in 1970. Cool, you're probably going to discos. And
you could pull it out and set it on top of the car and try to talk on the thing.
Yeah,
the
coverage I'm going
wasn't very good. So I don't remember what year it was, but now you know the type of technology I was working with, so... Yeah, it didn't fit in your pocket. You couldn't do that.
As a kid would say, back when they used to dress bad and go to discos, those types of fun. A home computer operating system, is it Apple, Windows? What you got?
Both, actually. I have Apple and Windows-based operating system. I'll tell you a neat thing about it, because that's what, you know, we were talking about a little bit earlier. We don't have a desktop computer in the home anymore, right? There's netbooks and notebooks and three iPhones and an Android.
You're gaining nerd points, my friend. You are gaining nerd points. And
see, one of the nerd points
is
like, there is no desktop computer anymore. It's antiquated, right?
What kind of a high-speed connection do you have at home?
I have the cable modem at home.
Okay. And I assume you have a smartphone there. You have an Apple iPhone?
I have an iPhone, yep.
Okay. And number of apps on that phone?
You know, I don't have that many apps on the phone, to be quite honest with you. I have about 6 different applications on it right now.
Also have an iPad?
No, I haven't gone down the path of an iPad yet, but it's looking like it might happen.
Don't have a choice.
Huh? Yeah.
Social networking. I know you're on LinkedIn.
I'm on LinkedIn. I actually do use Facebook. Mm-hmm. You know, just one thing about Facebook is my kids will never listen to the radio show, so I can check on their pages, you know, to make sure they're not doing anything that they shouldn't be doing. But yeah, I have a lot of friends on Facebook. I do have a Twitter account. Do every once in a while pop up a Twitter, and you know, we have some colleagues around, other CTOs and other security practitioners, and a lot of time we exchange information that way.
It's interesting to find trending topics there. And here's an old school question: the last book that you read?
You know, there's two books that I'm reading right now, which is Richard Clark's book, and I'm also reading kind of a self help book around called Excuses Be Gone. It's really, I don't know. It's a different kind of book. Both of them are. Richard Clark is about security and cybersecurity and everything else, and the other one is kind of about, you know, how to get a little bit more out of your day. And I find that sometimes, you know, my days get overwhelmed. So I'm trying to learn how to get past the excuse model and get more things done, but not feel like I'm still behind every day of my life, which we're probably all that way in the Washington, D.C. area, but I'm trying to learn how to do it differently. Hopefully it'll work.
Yeah, that's I think the last person I had in the studio, I said, there's 1,440 minutes in a day. How would you have used the minutes differently to manage this project? This is a great question to ask a project manager, because they always kick themselves in the head and said, oh, I should have done it. And there's no good answer to that. But it's
no,
question,
it's not.
Though.
So you see, you know, so yeah, there's a little geek there by reading Richard's book, but also is a little fighting geek trying to do, figure out how to get more out of your day and not be worn out.
You've got a pretty good perspective going back to the early times, a lot of different organizations here. Where do you see government websites now and apps, and where do you think it's going to change here in the next 3 or 4 years? What direction is it going to go? Is it going to go HTML5? Is it going to go apps? Is it going to go only iPhone? I mean, what kind of, you know, big general trends do you see?
Well, I see a couple of things that really probably have to happen, because I did a little research like you did, and I was looking last night, and I said, let me go find out. Let me type into Google and try to find some mobile-friendly U.S. government websites. And there was a finding. It was done just earlier this month, and they listed 3. And one of them was the FCC, the other one was the SEC, and another one was a conglomeration of states around legislation these states were posting. And they were actually in the mobile format, right? We could have the page slices and not have to pull up a web browser each time, because that's the biggest problem. On a mobile device, you can't have multiple pages in most environments open it several times. So you look at what you want, and then you're going to open up a brand new page, and you have to do forward and backwards and all that kind of stuff. So you can't have multiple browsers open up like you can on a laptop or a desktop or a netbook, right? Which is one of the downfalls. I think that's kind of the application environment we have to look at from the federal agency perspective. How can you get more information on a single web page? And then how do you actually provide the URLs to get to the next depth of level without having somebody lose everything that they had before through that search process?
And from my listener's perspective, and be transparent, and be secure, and do it with a reduced budget, and underwater, and tied behind the back, and blindfold. I mean, it's a challenge that my listeners have. I mean, I live next door to a guy who works for federal, and I said, geez, you know, that's... It's a challenge you have there, you know. In the commercial world, if you're expected to do something, they're going to fund it. Or, I mean, I mean, I guess more familiar with the commercial world. I mean, there's an objective, they fund it and move on. I would never expect someone to say, okay, this is what you have to do, bye. I mean, this is a challenge too, I guess, is just juggling what is the most efficient. If we're going to use Symantec to manage our mobile devices, are they the cheapest ones out there? Will they give us the best value? Are they going to allow us to manage some of these? Are they going to give us a kill option? I mean, and I think that's the question people are with, you know, Symantec, should we use them? Should we do it ourselves? Should we use product A, B, or C? Or what, has Symantec been around enough? I mean, what do these people know? I mean, it's a challenge.
Yeah, no, I understand it. And what I'll tell you is, you know, I'll throw the Symantec commercial in, right? So we use basically the same platform for managing desktop, laptop, computers, and we've extended that over into the mobile environment. So what it means is your network administrators, they don't have to learn a whole new program. They don't have to learn a whole new product to be able to do that. They're looking at additional functionality. And I think that's what we have to do, right? Assets are assets. The policy, the definition, and the way that you control these devices are very different, but being able to manage them on a day-to-day basis to truly tie mobile devices into this whole continuous monitoring realm that the federal government's looking at, you have to do that. Or are you just going to lose control very quickly?
Video. I helped a company do a couple-minute video for their website here last week. Any risk involved with more and more video on handheld devices and on machines, or is that just something that's slowly and no one's going to worry about? And all of a sudden, 5 years is going to be, it's that's where all the malicious code is hiding now, huh?
Well, you know, the video thing goes back. So I did a little research on this one a while back and looked at it, and we started seeing actual malware payloads associated to codecs within video back in 2001. So it's nothing new, right? There's lower fruit hanging for the bad guys than have to worry about going out creating malicious code into codecs. But as that lower fruit is being raised up and it's being harder for them to find areas to penetrate, I wouldn't put it past them to start looking at video as one of those methods, because it's being more widely adopted on more varied platforms. So now what's it making? It starts making that the low-hanging fruit, because the other stuff we're protecting better against.
Right now, the low-hanging fruit, I guess, are apps. And the number I hear is that 95% of all apps that are downloaded are used once. Is that a good number? You think it's too high?
You know, it could be. I don't know. I think about that is, I said I have maybe five or six apps on my phone, and I use them all the time. But you think about a younger generation, they'll download it, they'll think it's cool, they'll use it one time, and then it's like, okay, I'm not going to delete it. I'm just going to leave it there in case I want to show a friend. And then I'm going to go download the next three that my friends were really cool in that environment. So.
Yeah, it's whatever is cool. If you're listening to this show and it's before June 14th, 2011, right, there's a symposium coming in downtown for my audience, for federal IT professionals. If you're in this mode where you're evaluating different systems and realizing that goofballs like me are walking in the office with different, you know, iPads, and how do you manage all this code? I mean, the symposium coming up will address many of these different topics, and they've got Colin Powell as a speaker, so you can't really top that, can you?
No, you definitely can. We've got a great speaker this year. There's a lot of speakers from the government sector that's going to be involved in many of these sessions. So there will be working group sessions. There's going to be a lot of different aspects to us. There's going to be some keynotes that, like you said, with Colin Powell doing it. Rand Beers is also going to be doing a keynote in this. And it's a great time, and it's a lot of great information, and you'll probably meet a lot of your associates down at this event.
I think now's the time to start special interest groups on the specific topic and discuss it among your peers and find out, well, how are the folks over at Interior doing it? How are the folks over at Energy doing it? And maybe that guy in Energy is doing it. I could learn something from him and share. And I think that's the value of transparency in a lot of these, is that, well, geez, maybe I can adopt and figure out, well, maybe Symantec is good for this. And so many different variations on security requirements for every agency is going to be there, and a lot of agencies should be there.
Definitely so. Absolutely.
Well, this is a wonderful interview. I have five more pages of notes. We'll have to continue this maybe later on this year when there'll be new threats out there, new target vectors, or we want to call them. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we had a long, wonderful chat about mobile security with John Bordwine, Public Security Sector CTO at Symantec. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
What bills in Congress could affect your pay, benefits, and agency budgets? Federal News Radio's Bill Tracker follows them all. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. Search term Bill Tracker.